Parshas Ki Teitzei, which we'll read of Yirtzeh Hashem in just a few days. We're going to open up to the beginning of the Parsha, Dvarim Chaf Aleph. And what we want to study today is how powerful and how far-reaching is Pshuto Shel Mikra, the simple text of the Torah. Can we derive halacha and paskin based on the Torah Shebichsav, even if there's nothing in Torah Shebal Peh, there's nothing in Shas or in Poskim, just straight go back to the Chumash, read the Psukim, and derive conclusions, halacha lemaisa, from the Psukim. So let's begin the parasha inside. Ki seitzei lemilchama alayvecha. And what happens when you're successful in battle? You take captives, correct? Unasano Hashem elokech v'yadech v'shavisa shivyo. V'ra'isa v'shivyo eishas yifas tor. This is the parasha of eishas yifas tor. And it's strange that the Torah addresses the case of a soldier, v'chashakta ba, who, so to speak, has a craving or a desire for this beautiful woman, this eishas yifas tor. And v'lakachta lecha l'isha. And the Torah goes through an entire detailed process. Here, we're, George, if you want to look, we're in Dvarim Chaf Aleph, the beginning of the parak, in which the Torah allows this Jewish soldier to marry this non-Jewish woman, and she has to undergo a whole process in which, you remember, she mourns her family, and she becomes a gioris, and she becomes part of the Jewish community. So what we want to look at is Rashi, Dibra Maschil V'lakachta Lecha L'Isha. This is Pasuk Yud Aleph, if you have the Rashi inside. Rashi says, Lo Dibra Torah El Keneged Yetzahara. Very famous quote. It's based on a Gemara in Kiddushin on Daf Chaf Aleph. The Gemara says that God created a Yetzahara, and as a result of those very strong temptations, which are especially intense during a battle period, a war period, the Torah had to give some sort of a compromise, some sort of an allowance, recognizing, as it were, the power of the Yetzahara. Shem Eina Kodesh Baruch Hu, if God is not going to take into consideration the power of the allurement of the Yetzahara, V'eino matira, and if God would not allow in this parasha to marry this woman, Yisa'ena bi'isa, he's going to take her in any event. The Yetzirah is so powerful, the Torah recognizes that there's no possibility that a human being will be able to overcome those temptations. And therefore, the Torah allows for this parasha. Now, there are two words here that are going to call our attention. If you look again, ki seitzela milchama alayvecha, and then it says, unesano Hashem alokecha biyadecha, and then v'shavisa shivyo. So we want to be very sensitive to a phrase here that seems to be wedged in between what I call the resha and the seifa, the beginning of the pasuk and the end of the pasuk. The Torah could have said, ki seitzela milchama alayvecha, v'shavisa shivyo. You go out to battle, and during the course of the battle, you take captives. Now, what generally happens, let's say, for example, we're on the winning team here, we're on the Jewish squad, and we take a captive. Well, we're in the course of a battle. What might be the next part of this scenario, or this give and take here, from the enemy point of view? If we took one of their people captive, what are they going to do? You're all familiar with general warfare. What, even to this day, what happens if one team, you know, one nation takes a captive from the other nation? What does the other nation do? They do the same thing. They take captives, and then what happens? They have an exchange, right? This is what they call an exchange of prisoners, right? A prisoner exchange. You're familiar with that. So that, in a sense, there are two kinds of scenarios here. If you want to take a look hard over there, you can look on with them and open up the Kurish to Perek Chaf Aleph.
There's a conundrum here.
Yeah, I don't know whose that is, if that's the truth. Okay? So what is the significance of the words Unesano Hashem Elokecha Biyadecha. First, let's translate it literally. What does it mean literally?
To give, return a gift.
Well, no, I wouldn't say to return a gift. Tom, you have the art scroll. How does he translate those words? When we go out to battle,
God will deliver him into your hands.
Oh, deliver him into your hands. What does that indicate? When it says God will deliver your enemy into your hands. Again, we're not up to the Shamisa Shivyon yet. That hasn't happened yet. David, what would you say?
Helping us?
I can't hear you. What?
He's helping us?
No, but biyadecha. He's already what? Biyadecha means into your hands.
He's already given him.
Are we in the process of battle, or is the battle over?
The battle's over.
You remember the pinball machine games? You know, to say game over? You remember that? No?
It's already, okay, I guess in Australia. Already won the bottle. It's already run, they've already run the
Correct, bottle. Exactly, yeah. Yaakov. They've already won the battle. And then Vishavisa Shivyo. At the end of the battle, that's when you take someone captive. Okay? So what I want to share with you here is the following. Okay, let's take a look. I don't know if you have the. Do you have page Tuf Mem Vav? David, is there such a page there?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you take a look, he says, what is the significance, I'm just translating it loosely, of the phrase that God has already delivered your enemy into your hands before the Pasuk says, Vishavisa Shivyo, that you've taken a woman captive? Is this a precondition to the entire heter, the entire sugya or parsha of Eishes Yifas Toar? Under what circumstances can you take a woman captive and then marry her? Only if you've already what? You've won the battle. That's called a Tanai. Tanai means what?
Condition.
A condition. If and when you've completed the battle, you've successfully defeated your enemy because God delivered your enemy into your hands, then you're allowed to take a woman captive and go ahead and marry her. But kol od, as long as the battle is still going on and the Jewish nation has not declared victory, then the whole sukkah, this whole parsha of Eishes Yifas Toar, with all the halachic ramifications of lo dibra Torah El Keneged Bnei Adam in the Torah, Keneged Yetzahara in the Torah was Matir, they don't apply. O Shema, perhaps you could say, Diber HaKosuv Behoveh. What is Diber HaKosuv Behoveh?
He's talking practical terms.
Yeah, it's a divine promise, meaning God promised us that we will succeed in battle and we'll be able to take captives, but it doesn't mean that only after, you know, there's no sequence here. There's no indication that first we have to succeed and declare ourselves victorious and only then take someone in captive. And for this we have a Meshech Chochmah. Now, I've mentioned the Meshech Chochmah many times. Who is the Meshech Chochmah? He came from Lithuania, from a city called Dvinsk. The Russians call it Dagopils. What was his name? Nobody remembers? Rav Meir Simcha, yeah. He was the Meshech Chochmah. He wrote the famous Sefer called the Or Sameach. There's a yeshiva here in Yerushalayim that's named after that gadol, Rav Meir Simcha Midvinsk. There was another gadol in the same city. That was
the
Rogachova, right. And even though they knew each other, but you know, the Rogachova had his very high standards. His name was Rav Yosef Rosen. And nobody could meet up to his standards, you know. So at the funeral, the Rogachova spoke after Rav Meir Simcha passed away, and he started crying because he said he just began to understand learning. What a loss it was. Just when he was at the threshold of understanding, then he died, you know. In any event, Rav Meir Simcha Midvinsk wrote the Meshech Chochmah, and here at the beginning of Ki Teitzeh, he says, Nira, it appears to me, Dehu Tnai, it's a precondition, Beheter Yifas Toar, that when are you allowed to marry this woman, Dafka only if Im Hashem Nasan Ha'oyev Biyad Yisrael, that the battle has been terminated and it reached its victorious conclusion. Aval kederech hamilchamos, but if they're still in the process of battle, Elu shovim mehem, for oyev shovim mehem, these take shevi, meaning capture from them, and the enemy from us. Vaderech, and then kishosim shalom, if there's a what we call a ceasefire, meaning there's no culmination or termination of the battle. Machlifim hashvuyim, this is the Beis Simcha writing about prisoner exchange. She'enam ni'osim od l'molchama, after all, since we want to get back those who were captured, and right now we're in a state of a ceasefire, in such a case, we need this woman who was taken captive as a bargaining chip. We're not going to allow this man to marry her, even though, again, he's all hepped up, you know, he's all craving and he desires and so on, but she's too valuable in a prisoner exchange to just forfeit her. She's a very important pawn in our hands. V'lachen ki avur ha'yifas Torah shemagayro v'nosa li'ishav al korcha yakvenu yakvenu Yisrael choshu v'nichpad. He says that only after the battle is over and we've successfully defeated our enemies, then if a yifas Torah is very tempting and alluring for this man, we're going to allow him to marry her, and there's no loss, right? Yakvenu Yisrael choshev v'nichpat. But if we're still in the course of the battle, al ze lo hutra yifas tor, then the Torah did not permit a man to marry this yifas tor. Rak ba'ofen shenosno Hashem lo'ayev v'yadecha, only when God delivered your enemy into your hands, oz then yocholi akva, he can keep this woman and not offer her for a prisoner exchange, because there won't be a prisoner exchange because the Jewish nation has been victorious. Now this is unbelievable. There is no source for this conclusion anywhere in Shas, anywhere in the Sugyas, anywhere in the Yerushalmi, in the Bavli, in the Rishonim, in the Poskim. It's purely a chiddush of Rabbi Simcha Midvinsk, and it's based on a very careful, meticulous reading of the verse in the Torah. And what I'd like to show you is that this is not the only time that Rabbi Simcha does this kind of thing. Okay, this is, I think, a little bit typical of Rav Meir Simcha. So, if you take a moment, don't lose the place, but turn back to Parshas Mishpatim for a second. Actually, I think I have it. Let me just bring it in.
Just, I want to know when the Bnei Yisrael years ago, 1,000 years ago, when they, I'm not talking about people who are idol worshippers, but when they won battles, what did it do with the girls say they did want to marry? What was their responsibility?
Yeah, this is the Meshech Chochma. Again, if anybody has the time to photocopy, not now, but a little bit later. And back in Parshas Mishpatim, if you have a Chumash, open up to Shmos Chav Beis. Okay, Shmos Chav Beis is the parsha of Haganov.
Shemot.
Shemot Chav Bet, right? And we're going to look carefully at the first two psukim, the first three psukim, maybe.
What Cedric is it?
It's Parshas Mishpatim, Sedra Mishpatim. Ibamach Teres Yimotze Haganov, Vehukov Ameis, Ein Lo Dom. Okay, now notice the word Yimotze. Okay, so we're talking about someone who digs his way into someone else's house. He's a burglar. And we find the Ganov. Now again, I don't want to get into all the details here about why we're allowed to kill this robber, if need be. But in Zarch Hashem Shalav Domim Lo, if we know that he's not a robber who's coming to kill, and again we have to know all the sugyas in Sanhedrin to figure out how we know that, that's not for us now, then Shalim Yishalim, then he becomes a regular Ganov, And im ein lo, if let's say by the time we prosecute him, he doesn't have money to repay and compensate for this robbery, for this theft, then v'nimkar b'gnei vaso, then he's going to be sold as an eved ivri. So again, let's just review. What we have here is a parsha in which somebody robs someone else, and he doesn't have the money to pay back for the robbery, then he gets sold as an eved ivri. And in this parsha, the Torah says, yimotzei hagan. Then look at Pasuk Gimel. There it says a little bit different. It says, v'im himotzei timotzei biyada. In other words, we're no longer describing the theft itself, but in a different kind of phrase, which is reflexive, himotzei timotzei, we found the ganav in his hands, then it says that he pays, in fact he pays kefel if he's a ganav, but it doesn't say anything about being sold as an eved ivri. So there are two questions that we're asking here. Number one, why is it that in Psukim Aleph and Beis, the Torah uses the language of yimotzei, whereas in Pasuk Gimel it says himotzei timotzei? And secondly, why is it that in Pasuk Beis we have a nimkar b'gnei vasa, we sell him as a ganov, and in Pasuk Gimel it says that he pays, but it doesn't say anything about selling him? So the Meshech Chachma here in Parshas Mishpatim has an unbelievable chiddush. He says that the Gemara tells us that himotzei timotzei is a case where, listen carefully, Reuven's animal roams into Shimon's backyard, and instead of returning it, Shimon decides to lock it up and to hold it and possess it in his domain. He's a ganov, but what's the difference between him and the case of someone who goes into someone's house and takes something out of his house? Do you see a difference between the two cases? What do you say, David? You're shaking your head, so I assume you...
Well, I see the difference.
Well, how would you describe the difference? Which case is more active?
One's active and one's passive.
Correct. If he goes ahead and Reuven goes into Shimon's backyard, then he takes it out and he brings it into his backyard, locks it up, that's an active kind of gneva. If on the other hand Reuven's animal roams into Shimon's backyard, so Shimon didn't actually steal it from Reuven's backyard, all Shimon did is he locked it up and he wants to keep it for himself, that's a different kind of a gneva. And Rav Meir Simcha wants to suggest the following chiddush, unbelievable chiddush, which you'll find absolutely nowhere in Shas. And that is that when it says in Pasuk Beis, v'nimkar b'gnei vasa, that if he doesn't have the money, he's going to be sold as an eved ivri, that only applies in the case described in Pasuk Aleph, where he went into someone's rishus, actively entering into his backyard, and took something out. That's called an active gneva.
But that's pretty obvious, because if he kept the animal locked up, he's got the animal to give back, so they put this stuff to give, he does have to be sold as a slave. The only time he's going to be sold as a slave is he can't pay for the animal, or if he doesn't have the money to pay for what he stole. Here he's got the animal, he gives it back, so therefore what's his problem? How can he be sold for a slave?
Right, but let's say Tom, for example, after he locks it up, the animal gets lost. You know, let's say it gets hit by lightning or whatever it might be. Okay. The point is that the Rav Meir Simcha says something, listen carefully, no one says this, except for Rav Meir Simcha Mivinsk, that if the animal was stolen, not actively, but because it roamed into the rishus of the ganav and he locked it up, he doesn't get sold. If the animal is lost, then he can't pay damages. He can't pay compensation. Why? Because it was only, in Pasuk Gimel, himotzei timotzei biyado. It was found in his hand, meaning it roamed into his property, and he locked it up. Anyway, I just wanted to show you that because it's very fascinating to me. We'll go back now to Parshas Ki Tetzeh that we're studying. That Rav Meir Simcha consistently will derive conclusions and write his own Shulchan Aruch, so to speak, his own codes, based on the way he understands the Psukim in the Torah. Now, at the same time as Rav Meir Simcha lived, and in the same area of the world, almost. Actually, Rav Meir Simcha was in a city called Dvinsk. Dvinsk is technically not in Lithuania. I mean, again, Russia keeps getting divided and subdivided, but actually, that's called Latvia. You've heard of Latvia. That's the only, I think, district in Russia where they use English letters. You know, they don't use the...
So the Litvaks come from.
Right, but some of the Litvaks are in Lithuania, which is near Latvia. And one of the great scholars, maybe you heard of him, who lived in Lithuania in a city called Valozhin, was from Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, the Netziv mi Valozhin. He was the Rosh Yeshiva of one of the greatest Lithuanian yeshivas that ever existed, if not the greatest, called the Valozhin Yeshiva. If you want to visit the yeshiva, I wouldn't necessarily recommend it, but on your next trip to Lithuania, now it's a chicken farm. They made out of it, you know, the Russians. Anyway, so if you take a look in the Netziv, here at the beginning of Parshas Ki Tsetse, he writes the following: Li'achar gmar ha'melchama, when the battle is done. This is on the bottom of your page, Tuf Mem Vav. Ukvar avra esa sakana. Now the danger is completely past. Then we apply the parsha of Yifas Torah. Masha enken kisha od ha'melchama lifneim, if they're still engaged in battle, then we don't apply this parsha. Right, there'll be all sorts of exchanges of prisoners, of captives. The Oz, in such a case, even though he fell in love with this woman, he's got to overcome his desire, from having a relationship, an intimacy with her, and he's got to give up this woman, because she's going to be a very important pawn in the prisoner exchange. So we have two great scholars, the Meshech Chachma on the one hand, and the Netziv in his Pirush Al HaTorah, which is called Hey Mikdover, on the other hand. They both came up with the same insight. And if you'll ask me, says the Netziv, how could the Torah demand of a person who has such a profound desire for a woman to give her up in this prisoner exchange? He quotes the Rambam. The Rambam says in Perek Zayin Milchus Melachim that when a person goes out to battle, what has to be his mindset? A Jewish soldier. He says, Me'achar she'ikaneis l'kishrei melchom, when he goes out to battle, yish'an. What does that word mean? Yish'an. Like, George, you're leaning on something. That's called Yish'an. Yish'an al mikveh Yisrael Moshion b'yeis tzorah. A person should lean on He, with a capital H, who will bring salvation to the people of Israel at the battle, in the battlefield. V'yeda, and he has to go out there with a mindset, shal yichud Hashem u'osa melchama. He's going out to battle, says the Ram, to fulfill the mitzvah of Yichud Hashem and declare God's oneness and His sovereignty. V'yosim nafsho b'kapov lo yirov lo yifached lo yachshov lo ishto v'lo bonov. He shouldn't be thinking at that time about his wife and his children. El yimche zechrona milibo. He should remove all these emotional family connections out of his heart. V'yifna mikol davar l'muhammad. He should put all these other distracting thoughts out of his mind. Single, focused on what? On going out to battle for the sake of Hashem, for the mitzvah of Hashem. So the Netziv therefore says that already in the Rambam I could see that a person who goes out to battle may have to get to the point in which he can overcome any of his natural tendencies. And the Torah could demand that even if he fell in love with this woman and he took her captive, within the course of the battle, he cannot hold her for his own. He's got to give her over and forfeit her, and she will be part of an exchange.
Is it true that these girls that you fought against, the opposition, they're supposed to have dressed themselves up and made themselves look
beautiful? Yeah, it could be that was part of their part of their strategy, temptation, that they would try to tempt our soldiers. Yeah. Okay. Now, on page Tof Mem Zayin, he quotes a Nemuke Yosef, one of the great Rishonim, in Perek HaChovel. That's the eighth Perek of Bava Kama. And he writes the following. B'dover shekach emes v'lo nisbar lo smach min haTorah. If you understand the Torah, and you come up with what you are absolutely convinced is truth, but yet you find no source for it anywhere in the codes or in the Rishonim or whatever it is. Rishusli Adam, a person has the okay, he has the green light, as we would say, to darshan and come to conclusions. He says, "V'afal gav the einon of dova don gzeres shava liatzmo." There's something called a gzeres shava. Right, you know, there are 13 different principles, hermeneutic principles by which we interpret the Torah. One of them is called Gzeirah Shavah. Gzeirah Shavah has to come through a tradition, something that you received from your father, then he from his father, or from your Rebbe, and his from his Rebbe. There's got to be an unbroken tradition. That's called Gzeirah Shavah. We take a word from here and a word from there, and we equate the two. It's an analogy. He says, nevertheless, he says, nevertheless, the Gaonim, that was the period even before the Rishonim, and certainly the Rishonim, came up with their own drashas. Umatsui Barambam. He says, if you look in the Rambam, quite frequently the Rambam comes up with his own ideas, and he has no source for it. V'lo nemar, we wouldn't say hashto tanoiv amaroi lo yodei v'anan yadinon. The Tanoim in the Mishnah and the Amoraim in the Gemara didn't know about it. And we know about it? We can come up with new ideas? He says, don't say such a thing. The Im Kain B'Tanoiv Amoraim Gufayo Eich Gilu Vasroi Yalfusa Mashalo Gilu Kamoi. You can always ask, well, how did the Tanoim come up with drashas that didn't come before them? How did the Amoraim come up with drashas that don't appear in the Mishnah? El Anan Shlichu Sayukav Dinon. We are fulfilling the agency of those who came before us. We're accepting their methodology. We're standing on their shoulders, and we're coming up with new insights.
Isn't that an awfully dangerous situation to be in? Because if people come up with their own,
it really is.
That could be wrong.
But listen what he says in the next line. Maybe he's addressing your question, Tom. I don't know. He says, "V'chol mishayimta shorish min haTorah." If he comes up with a source for something in the Torah, meaning an insight which no one had before, and he can convince others that he's correct, others who have the methodology, then he says that he was zocha, he merited Tushia's insight, umegalan is Torah's shebenigla, and he can reveal something that was concealed until that point. In other words, that's the end of the Nemuke Yosef. The quote from the Nemuke Yosef indicates, and this is one of the Rishonim 1,000 years ago, that the process of creating Torah and seeing new insights into the Torah that has never been revealed heretofore still continues. That's an amazing chiddush.
But today we also say that you can't change the law unless you have said Herod bigger than the one who made the set.
Well, again, Tom, we're not changing the law. What we're doing is we're interpreting the law.
Well, that's changing the law.
If
I come up with a chiddush that I can travel on Shabbos, I'm changing the law.
Right, because it's already codified that you're not allowed to travel on Shabbos. But here we have a parasha called Eishes Yifas Tor, or we have a parasha called V'nimkar B'gnei Vosso. We don't know. The Torah doesn't tell us what happens if. Do you follow my point? In other words, here the codes don't address scenario A, B, or C. Comes along Ramer Simcha, the Netziv, and he says, based on my understanding of Torah, and I'll show it to you inside, he says, I think that this parasha of Eishes Yifas Torah and Dibur Torah Keneged Hayetzahara applies at the end of battle. Again, if the Mishnah would say that it applies even during the course of the battle, then Chas V'Sholom, heaven forbid, Karama, there's no way, no how the Netziv or the Ramei Simcha come up with a contradiction to a Mishnah. But if the sources that we have never address this issue, right? That's why do we have today poskim? Why do we need all the poskim? The answer is because there are issues that come up that have never been addressed, or at least not in a revealed way. Now we have to go back to the original sources and reveal that which was concealed until now. And that's what he's doing. David, did you want to say something?
I was just saying about slightly connected with this is the prisoner exchange.
Yeah.
And there was a big outcry in Israel about trying to stop like 1 for 10.
Yeah, it's got to be 1 for 1. Though,
yeah, it's got to be 1 for 1.
We're talking about Gilad Shalit, right?
Yeah.
But you know what? Look, I'm not here to criticize the Israeli government. That was the decision that they made. But at least they had the opportunity, because they had taken so many captives, to enter into this bargaining deal. Now, if a person is allowed to take a woman captive, in this case a woman, and she's his, and he could be ma'akiv, meaning he could now hold her for his own and go through this whole process, then we've lost one bargaining chip. So there's a certain logic, a compelling logic, that would lead us to the conclusion that we don't want any... You know, could you imagine if every person has the right to do such a thing, to take a captive and lock him, you know, put him under lock and key? You know, our war efforts might be hampered, if you will, by such a thing.
Has the attitude of the Israeli government changed now? It's 1 to 1. They're trying 1 to 1.
I don't know. Is that so? I don't know. I really don't know. But anyway, Rav Osa, do you see where the Rav Simcha reads it into the pasuk? He says, "V'nesano Hashem Elokecha." He's reading it when God has delivered you into your hands. Now,
and killers,
there's a paragraph here called Ulam, which I wanted to point out to you. And he says that there is one source back in the time of Chazal that may seem to contradict this chiddush, this insight, this new revealed concept of the Netziv and Rav Meir Simcha. And that's in the Sifri. You know, the Sifri is the Medrash Halacha of Sefer Dvarim. And it says the following. It says, "Imasisa kol ha'omer be'inyan." If you go through the entire process, right? You remember, I'm not going to go into it now. That she has to shave her head, and she has to leave her nails long, and then she has to change her clothing, and she has to cry for her parents for 30 days. So there's a whole long process in which she becomes maguna, and we're always hoping that the soldier will change his mind. Says the Sifri, "Im asisa kol ha'omer be'inyan," when you fulfilled all the conditions, "sof Hashem Elokecha nisana b'yadecha." If you're playing by the rules, then God promises that He will deliver the enemy into your hands. What does that sound like to you, Rav Osa? How did the Sifri apparently understand the words, the same words that we're shtelling on today, that we're working on? Unesano Hashem Elokech v'yodecha.
It will work out.
No, again, if you go through the entire process, then God promises you that He will deliver your enemy into your hand. It's not a Tanai the way we said. When Vishavisi only have. No, he's saying that go through the entire process, and then God will deliver you into His hands. And God promises you, because you're playing by the rules. And therefore, it would seem clearly from the Sifri that V'nesano Hashem Elokech V'yodecha is not a Tanai, not a condition, the way Rav Meir Simcha and the way the Tziv understood it, but according to the Sifri, it's a divine promise. Says the Tziv, in a different commentary, now the Tziv wrote two works. He wrote a commentary on the Torah, that's what we quoted until now, that's called the Hemek Dover. He also wrote something called the Emek HaNetziv on the Sifri. And in his comment on this Sifri, he writes, "Uleinyan halacha lo rotza atana lomer didiya kakosu shlo huta yifas toar elakasher nosto Hashem elkech v'yadav v'nitzchu v'mocham elgamrei." The Sifri refused, we would say balked, I think you don't pronounce the L, right? B-A-L-K. The Sifri backtracked here. He didn't want to say that only after the war is over, then the parasha of Yifas Torah applies. Why not? "De kevan de keneged yetzer hara dibra Torah, Kiri Isa Bekidushin is lo darish b'sifri v'nesano Hashem olkecha b'yodecha elo kehavtocha v'lo kitnai. So it's amazing. When you read the Nitziv in his commentary on the Torah and he's committed to interpret the Pesukim Kipshuto Shel Mikra, then he says in the Sano Hashem Yedecha is a Tnai. And only after the battle is won, then Vishavisa Shivyo. But when you read the Nitziv's commentary on the Sifri, he says, L'inyan Halacha, we're not going to interpret the Pasuk that way. Means we have to kowtow. I don't know what word. Can somebody help me with a word here in English?
Submit.
Submit. We have to submit ourselves to a higher authority, namely the Sifri, and we have to throw up our hands and give up our insight and paskin like the Sifri. In other words, as we said before, Tom, that when are you allowed to come up with this new insight, says the Nebuk Yosef, that's only if there's nothing in the early sources that contradicts you. So that it's Siv in his Pirush al Torah is just interpreting the Torah itself. He's not paskening Allah. When he gets to his commentary on the Sifri, then he has to have reverence and he has to submit himself to the higher authority of Chazal. Again, the Sifri dates back to the time of the Mishnah. And the Sifri understood that Nisano Hashem B'yadech is a promise that God will deliver the nation, the adversaries of the people of Israel into the hands of Israel, but it's no longer Tanai. And L'inyan Allah, he says, we have to accept the Sifri. Very fascinating. So ultimately, the Sifri is moved by the principle Lo Divra Torah El Kelashen B'nei Od. Excuse me, I keep saying it. Lo Divra Torah El Keneged Yetzer Hara. And that's the overriding force that plays the major role in this parsha. What difference does it make is as to whether or not you're still in the process of battle or the battle has been won. In both cases, the Torah has to address the Yetzer Hara.
You know, it's funny, with all that, Shem's thinking about how he sought out the captured woman. He doesn't end up by reminding us of the proviso, I don't know how you pronounce proviso, like you.
Right.
That you got left with a rebellious child. Well, that's a terrible result.
Result
of all this, following all the things you should do and shouldn't do, is not important.
Right, you're right. I have to study that. Yaakov, you're raising a very important question.
Because David happened to, did he marry David? King David, didn't he marry one of, that's why one of his children turned out the way they did.
Maybe,
was
maybe
it Absalom?
Right.
No, was he?
I don't know. I plead the fifth at this point, Yaakov. I'm not sure. Anyway, let's just wrap things up here on page Tav Mem Ches, if you have it. Yeah, and that page I gave out. Again, if somebody could help me with the photocopying rule if you want to make copies of it. I think, David, you have a copy of it, right?
You want me to make copies?
No, after, let's just finish it up and then maybe we'll have time to make copies. He basically says the following, that from the perspective of Pshuto Shel Mikra, the chayal, this soldier, during the course of the battle would have to overcome and subjugate his desires, according to both the Meshech Chochma and the Nitziv. And that's the pshat in the pasuk. But if that's the pshat in the pasuk, and there's a certain sanctity and a certain significance and authority to pshuto shel mikra, to the simple reading of the pasuk, la halacha says the Nitziv, we have to, as we say, we have to respect the authority of the Sifri, and even during the course of the battle he's allowed to marry her. How do we reconcile the two? It seems to be a clear-cut contradiction between Pshuto Shel Mikra and the way Chazal understood the pasuk. La halacha. So perhaps you could say that there's Ratzui and Mechayev. Ratzui means that we ask of a person to overcome his desires and his temptations. But then there's something, that's called Ratzui. And then there's something called Machayev. Machayev means we can compel you and we can force you. As far as the Machayev is concerned, we cannot compel you to overcome your desires. And even during the course of the battle, when you're overwhelmed by this tremendous burning desire, you're allowed to take this woman captive. That's as far as the Machayev is concerned. But you ask, what's Ratsui? What would be l'chatchila, the best way, if you could only overcome and subjugate your passions? Because after all, in terms of the overall war effort, we need this woman as part of, as a barter chip. Therefore, that's what the Pshuta Shel Mikra wants to tell us. Is yishtadel ha-chayal b'kol chocho. The chayal should try to, you know, maximize all his energies. Lo lizdatek la-heter shel yeshis fastor. Not to come and demand that, you know, yes, I'm allowed to marry her, give me this permission. No. Because wait until the milchama is over. But that's only what's ratzui. However, if he can't do so, then we're going to allow him the parsha of Eishes Yifastar even before the termination of the battle. So we have now a pasuk that can be interpreted in two ways. One way is a tnai, a condition, and that's ratsui. We really want to encourage this chayal to overcome his temptations. And then there's the way the Chazal interpreted, not as a tnai, but as a havtocha, as a promise. And therefore, even within the course of the battle, technically he can flex his muscle or activate this heter of Eishes Yifastar, because lo dibra Torah ela keneged yetzer hara. So the pasuk itself, again, very interestingly, can move in two different directions. Can be interpreted this way as a tnai, can be interpreted that way as a promise, as a havtocha. We rely on Chazal that they had the right Kabbalah, but that's la halacha. But still, in terms of what should be in the perfect world, if the world could operate on that level, we would encourage the chayal to overcome his temptations. That's the pshuta shel mikra, as a tnai, and wait and delay until the battle is over.
Would you frame it as a latchila and a bidyevet?
Correct. That's ratsui and chayav. L'chatchila and bidyevet, or chasidus and mikra adin. I'll give you an example. The Torah says ayin tachas ayin. How can the Torah say an ayin tachas ayin? Chazal come along and tell us no. He compensates him by paying moment. So why did the Torah confuse us? And the answer is, in an ideal world, he deserves to have his eye taken out. That's what justice would demand. And he has to know and he has to understand that we had a great long discussion about this, that if he's paying compensation because of the interpretation of Chazal, of Torah Shebaal Peh, he's paying for his own eye. His eye deserves to be removed, should be removed. That's what justice demands. He's paying as a kofar or a kind of kapara. The Torah says he can't take payment as a ransom if you killed someone. We're going to take this rotzeach and we're going to take his life, right? We're going to submit him to capital punishment, and there's no room for ransom. But in a case of a chavola, which means a physical injury, the Torah was compassionate and allows him to pay a ransom. So you'll ask me, so now, so why does it say ayin tachasai? And the answer is very clear, because ayin tachasai tells you that even though he's paying mom, he's doing so as a compensation for the eye that should be removed. This is the methodology of understanding the Torah on two different levels. On one level of how to interpret the Torah as a corpus of written law, and that's called Pshuto Shel Mikra. And then how to interpret the Torah based on the Kabbalah of Chazal, based on the tradition of Torah Shebaal Peh, it was passed through the generations. Ultimately, the machria, the final decisor, is going to be Torah Shebaal Peh. That's how the halacha is determined. But we should never undermine and ignore the Pshuto Shel Mikra. There's always going to be a message on some sort of ideal level up in the abstract world that has to be conveyed and must be derived from the Pshuto Shel Mikra. Okay, Rabbi Moshe, on page Tuf Mem Tes, which we don't have time for now, he has a whole nother approach to the sugya of Lo Dibra Torah Kiloshen Bnei Adam. Lo Dibra Torah, this is the third time I made the same mistake, at least I'm consistent. Lo Dibra Torah El Keneged Yetzer Hara. And he vacillates back and forth based on Pshuto Shel Mikra. as to whether or not the Torah really wants him to marry this woman, or as Yaakov pointed out before, the Torah really is hoping that he won't marry this woman. So that's the next article. And again, if anybody wants to photocopy it, it's about
same time
10 pages
tomorrow,
long.
Is it same time tomorrow, speaking?
Well, tomorrow I don't teach Chumash officially, so I certainly invite you to join my Blatchia, you know, my Gemara Shia.
Oh, okay.
You know, that's we're learning the Sefer Nida. I'm always interested in recruiting new blood. You know, for Tasi Mashma.
Yeah.
Okay. Right, so everybody should have a great.